Dear Heavenly Father, thank you so much for this day of worship, that we can all come together and praise your name. Lord, I ask that you come and speak through me today and speak your words, and let the ears and the eyes of everyone in this room be opened. Send your guardian angels to be and to guard this building as we discuss this very intricate topic of worship. I love you. Amen. So it works really well to start out with discussing a little bit of the scientific side of what's going on inside of our brains. The only reason we really, really wanted to start out with the whole advertising business in the last talk was to just seal it inside of your head. They spend billions and billions of dollars trying to affect each one and every one of us. This is so calculated, it's so studied, they know that this works. But what happens when the devil gets a hold of this same information? Now, we all have a wonderful opportunity to come together and to worship. We don't know how much longer that we are actually going to be able to openly praise God, worship together like this. And, you know, this day has been predicted that it will come to an end. We know that the end of the war that is happening here on this earth is going to be about worship. But have you ever sat there and asked yourself the question, why do we all worship? Why is it that each and every single one of us has this need inside of us to worship? Why did God create all of us with this deep desire? And if we know that the end of the war is going to be about worship, and we know that the war began over worship, isn't it extremely important to understand what is true worship? What does it mean to have true worship? Is there a right way to worship? Is there a wrong way to worship? Well, if you turn to Matthew 4:10, this is Christ speaking to the devil when he was tempting him. Then said Jesus unto him, "Get thee hence, Satan, for it is written, thou shalt worship the Lord thy God, and him only shalt thou serve." So coming out of the words or the mouth of Jesus himself, is saying that, listen, God is the only one that deserves our worship. In fact, later on, Jesus speaking to the woman at the well, and she's asking him about worship, and hey, you know, like the Jews say we should worship over here. This is what Jesus responds. But the hour cometh and now is, when true worshipers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth, for the Father seeketh such to worship him. God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. So there is a true way to worship God. We know that God is the only one that deserves our worship. The spirit, of course, is that non-physical part of you, that seat of your emotions, your character, and your soul. And as Brandon pointed out in the last presentation, our character is what's under attack. Watching and focusing time after time on evil characters, don't we take them on just like the advertising industry will show you a bag of chips enough time and you'll go out and buy their product? So our characters, our spirits, are what's under attack. Now, let's look at Cain and Abel here. You see, Cain thought he was worshiping God. He didn't not want to worship God. He only said, I'm going to worship God in this way. I'm going to take the fruits and the things of my labor, and I'm going to worship God in this way, and I'm going to show God what I've done. And of course, what was the result of that? A false system of worship that Cain had set up here, and all of a sudden, he murdered his brother. If you look at the Israelites coming out of the land of Egypt, and they were at the Mount Sinai, and Moses was up in the mountain getting the Ten Commandments. He was gone for no more than 30 days. And because they all had this deep need and desire to worship something, someone, anything, they all started to complain to Aaron and said, please make us a golden calf. We need to worship something. So they set up this false system of worship, and when Moses came down and realized what his people had gotten themselves into, a huge apostasy arose out of this. Remember the story of Balaam and his donkey. Do you remember why Balaam was asked to come and curse the Israelites? You see, the Israelites had just come out of wandering, and they were just standing on the edge of Canaan. And they were looking into Canaan, about ready to take over the land. And all of the Midianite kings were looking at these people that they had heard stories of for many, many years, that they were going to come and possess their land. And they were scared out of their minds. And they had heard that Balaam here, whoever Balaam would curse would be cursed, and whoever he would bless would be blessed. So they said, Balaam, please come curse these people, because we know that if they have God on their side, there's absolutely nothing that we can do to them. So Balaam, at their request, went to go curse them, but remember, he could only bless them three times. So the kings told Balaam, look, if we see your face again, that'll be the last day that you live. And Balaam went home, and he thought about it, and he was so in desire of the money, he came back to the Midianite kings, and he said, you want to know how to beat the Israelites? You see, as long as they are in true worship with their God, there's absolutely nothing you can do to them. You could send every last person in your army against them, and they would be defeated. But I'll tell you what. If you get them to worship anything other than their God, they will fall prey to your devices. And all of a sudden, God's favor will leave them, and they will be open prey to you. So they said, well, great, how do we do that? At Balaam's request, they said, throw some festivities, throw some parties. Let the Israelites just witness how you worship your gods, and they will all start to fall prey to spiritual idolatry. So that's exactly what happened. They started throwing parties. They started sending just a few Midianite women into the Israelite camp, not enough to be noticed, and they started becoming friends with the men, and they started taking them back, and before long, the idolatrous practices were being brought into the Israelite camp. And Israel fell into a false system of worship. And it wasn't long before Moses finally realized what was going on, and God gave Moses the decree to annihilate anyone that was involved in this idolatrous practice. Can you imagine your own people having to go out and slay your own people because of their following after other gods? So they were standing on the edge of the Promised Land. This is my picture of the Promised Land here. A warning of worship was issued in Deuteronomy 12, 30, and 31. It says, after they had been destroyed before you, be careful not to be ensnared by inquiring about their gods, saying, how do these nations serve their gods? We will do the same. You must not worship the Lord your God in their way, because in worshiping their God, they do all kinds of detestable things. They even burn their sons and daughters in the fire as sacrifices to their gods. So God here just said, don't even watch how they have their worship service, because after enough time, you will fall prey to their worship style. Perhaps the most memorable, when you think of a system of false worship, is Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego here, and the Nebuchadnezzar's golden idol. Now, if you remember why Nebuchadnezzar came up with this golden idol, he had been given the dream here where he was told that Babylon was going to be taken over by the Medes and the Persians and so on and so forth down the history of the world. And Nebuchadnezzar, in his arrogance, said, no, Babylon will always stand. And I know this is an artist's rendition of portraying the idol in an arrogant stance like this. But there's something that I really want to point out to you. We have many, many different systems of false worship set up today. Many different ones. But there is a system of false worship set up today that has striking similarities to this story. Does anybody want to take a guess of what system of false worship we have today? Do you know what this is? Interesting. A golden idol in the middle. Almost kind of even in the same sort of stance here. You see, the Oscars is the cream of the crop. It is the tippy top in an actor's world. This is what they all desire to get to. And what are they doing at the Oscars? What exactly goes on here? They're praising each other. They're giving each other these little tiny statues in recognition of their merits or things that they're doing, right? Look at the Oxford Dictionary definition of worship. This is a worldly definition. To treat someone or something with reverence or adoration appropriate to a deity. So it's even stating that worship is only appropriate to a god. Or number two, honor given to someone in recognition of their merit. So by a definition, do you know what the Oscars is actually called? It's not even called a television show. What is it called? It's called a ceremony. The Oscars ceremony. By a worldly definition, is, in a sense, a worship service. Now, the Oscars is typically the second most watched show each year. Almost 40 million people watched the show in 2007. Does anybody know what the number one most watched show is? The Super Bowl. You're correct. Do you know what just beat the Super Bowl? No. Michael Jackson. Just beat as many eyes on the television at one point in time. Michael Jackson. It's amazing to me. That's what's important in our world? So here, there's a clip that I'm going to show you. Now, there's different types of these little tiny statues that they give to each other. The Oscars is, of course, honoring film. There's one, the Emmys, which is television. The Grammys is honoring music. Now, I'm going to show you a clip from Stephen Colbert and Jon Stewart, where they're going to come out and they're going to tell you exactly what this little golden image is that they give to each other.
It's a pleasure to be here tonight.
Good evening, godless sodomites.
What are you doing?
I'm bringing the truth down. We're in Hollywood, the belly of the beast.
You can't just read the prompter?
I'm reading the prompter in here. You can read that.
Award show banter is not pablum. Reality television celebrates the human condition. By eliminating what's extraordinary and ordinary.
It warps the minds of our children and weakens the resolve of our allies.
The results are often dramatic and always unexpected. We're here to honor achievement in that category.
By giving you a golden idol to worship, kneel before your God, Babylon!
Remember, second most watched show in the world. This did not go out over a time that not very many people are watching television. This is how confident they are in what they're doing. And just like Brandon said, there's a bit of truth in every single joke. This is a Hollywood inside joke. And they're obviously saying, look, they hate reality television because reality television is now taking a chunk of the pie. And so they're making fun of it going, oh great, now you guys get to be worshiped like us. So they're making fun of it, but in a sense, there's still a bit of truth to it. Oscar. Does anybody want to take a guess what the name Oscar means? If you go to any of those little baby websites, I have a baby on the way, and so I've been looking at baby names and stuff. It's fun. But Oscar is Scandinavian and Old English in its origin. The meaning is divine strength, divine spear. Divine is, of course, of, from, or like a god, and a spear is, of course, a weapon. Is it possible that they are godlike weapons being used against us? Is it possible that they're titled these things for what they are? Does anybody know what this building right here is? The Shrine, you are correct. This is where the Oscars was held until 1999. They moved it to the Kodak Theater, but it was held here for a very long time. The Shrine is founded by these two guys right here, William Florence and Walter Fleming. They're high-ranking Scottish Rite Freemasons. Now, I don't want to go into a huge discussion of what Freemasonry is. That's not what today's purpose is. I do, however, want to point something out to you. For those of you in the room who do not know what Freemasonry is, it is a secret society where you climb different ranks to get through these different levels, and the farther up you go, the higher and higher you get into this esoteric occultic knowledge, okay? The first, second, and third degrees, they're generally helping the community. They're doing very good things. But when you start to become 31st, 32nd, and 33rd degrees, like most of our major leaders in the world, that's when you start to find out that they follow the light bearer Lucifer, okay? My point is not to point out if this is real or not. What I do want to show you is something fascinating about the Oscars. Hollywood has been long-time Masonic, and they're very open about it. Gene Autry, John Wayne, Nat King Cole, Duke Ellington, a lot of these household names were openly Masonic. In fact, the three guys that started Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, Warner Brothers, and 20th Century Fox were all high-ranking Freemasons. Okay? This here is called a Masonic tracing board, the one on your guys' right. Now, what this is for is they use it when people are initiated into Freemasonry. They teach the first, second, and third degrees how to spot Freemasonry in real life. So there's different symbols in here that only to people who have been initiated and know what they are can spot them out. So, like, there's a ladder, there's a sun with a light beaming towards it, notice the checkered floor. All these things mean something to Masons, okay? Freemasonry has long used things of sun worship in their service ceremonies. This here is a Masonic picture where it's called the Sun Man. The sun is the head of man. They've used sun worship in their practices, okay? Oh. This is inside of the shrine. Notice the ceiling. You can always tell you're in a Freemason building when you see elements of sun worship or elements of sun motifs. Notice the top of the thing here. I'll change the picture here. Maybe you can see it a little bit better. It's like a sun motif, the thing on the top.
And the Oscar goes to...
Remember what I just told you. This is in a high-ranking Freemasonic building. Do you notice anything I just showed you? Let me change this picture here. This thing is also called a Masonic tracing board right here. Notice the checkered floor. Here, I'll change the picture here so you can see it a little bit better. Notice the checkered floor. Notice the archway. Notice there's a sun with a sun motif beaming down onto a little, like, shrine thing in the center. What this is the last time it was ever held in this building. This is the Mason saying, we own this. This is part of our operation. And to most people's heads, goes right over the top. You have no idea even how deep that level goes. In fact, they moved the whole operation to the Kodak Theater. This is the Kodak Theater here, right here. And then this is inside the Kodak Theater. You still have the picture of the archway. You still have the checkered floor, the sun motif on the top. So they kept all the elements of Freemasonry and just moved it over here. This here is called the Gate of Babylon. In fact, if you go to Hollywood and you go to this little place right here, I used to live down the street from here. I watched them build this whole thing. This actually is called the Babylonian Court right here. This is the Gate of Ishtar. That's Isis and Horus. This is sun worship. They're still incorporating all of these elements into their business. In fact, sun worship, does anybody know where it started? Babylon. Where we first get our writings of where sun worship started was with Nimrod. When Nimrod died, it was believed that he went into the stars, and that's how the whole start to worship and follow the stars started to happen. But I beg to differ. It started well before that. If you turn to Revelation 12:4, and his tail drew a third part of the stars from heaven and did cast them to earth, what do we know stars are? Angels. In fact, in Isaiah 14:12, 12 through 14, how art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which did weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into the heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will be like the Most High. This idea of star worship, being more famous than God, originated with Satan, wanting to be more famous than God. And you see, Satan is not stupid. All he's done is he's taken what used to be these wooden idols that people used to worship that actually don't do anything, they don't talk, they can fall over and die and break and everything. And he said, you know what's actually better worshiping than a little wooden idol? What if we turn it into people? Now we have stars of all kinds. Basketball stars, football stars, movie stars, baseball stars. You name it, there's a star for everything out there that is being worshipped. In fact, even Kermit the Frog here, who is absolutely not even alive, has his own star. And they put him in stone and immortalized them. In 1 Timothy 4:1, it says, now the Spirit speaketh expressly that in latter times some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils. For those of you that were in Sabbath school this morning, I talked a little bit about my experience of leaving my home Christian faith, my Adventism that I was trained and I knew, and I left the faith just like this. I gave heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils. Why? How was it that I was able to be raised with so much knowledge and leave it at a drop of a hat? How is that possible? I was absolutely obsessed with television, movies, and anything to do with acting. I lived, breathed, slept, ate acting. I wanted to be an actor so bad. In fact, when Brad Pitt came out in Fight Club with that fur coat, I bought a fur coat and I went out and tried to be like, yeah, what's up? I followed what these celebrities did. I read about them. Of course, when you're in the grocery store, you know what they're all doing anyway. You can't get away from it. But here, why is it that celebrities are so attractive? And how is it that they're able to captivate so many people? Oh yeah, before I get to that, here's a little article that I just found recently in Time Magazine. Celebrity worship, is it good for your health? Interesting. Who here among us has fallen a victim to a little bit of celebrity worship? And now new scientific evidence or research has found that celebrity crushes are not only common, but may be even healthy. A study published September 10 this last year suggests that the act of celebrity worship may... I think a lot of that got cut off. Oh, it did. Maybe I should erase that and... Oh, well. Basically, what this article is saying is that the celebrity worship is good for your health because if you focus on a celebrity's life enough, usually they're the heroic type, usually they're the type that are the cream of the crop, the top, that you can start to take on their characteristics as your own, because the more that you focus on them, you take on their heroic characteristics as yourself. Now, what does that mean for us Christians? If you focus on Christ's life enough, what do? You take on the characteristics of Christ. If you focus on a celebrity's life enough, what do? You take on the characteristics of that celebrity. That's why through repetition of evil acts, you see, movies thrive on conflict. You wouldn't watch it if there wasn't a good guy, bad guy, and all of a sudden, you know, somebody has to have this character arc and change. If the movie was all good, most of the time people probably wouldn't even watch it. So, by these articles, or by what they're saying in this article here, is that you can actually take on their characteristics as yourself. Now, because people form bonds with their favorite celebrities, oh yeah, that's what it says right there. I didn't even read it. Oh man, that's all messed up. There is a growing body of evidence that suggests that the human brain is not well equipped to distinguish between real relationships and as psychologists call them, parasocial or imagined ones. That means that some of the benefits that people get from pseudo relationships with celebrities may be the same as those reaped from real friendships and real life interactions. It's okay to get caught up in the palamania if her example makes you feel better about your chaotic life, juggling work and family, as long as you realize that she won't be there to talk you through your next family crisis. Now, isn't that just like Satan to come up with a system of false worship that you worship these people as your God, but yet they won't be around during your problems? Of course, Michael Jackson, this article was talking about how he topped in the media the funeral of the Pope, the president, talking about Reagan, and Princess Diana.
Why are so many of Hollywood's most famous actors and actresses able to be so amazingly effective and convincing in their performances?
That guy was so electrified that it came through the television.
How is it that they can move us to laughter, tears, or anger at the drop of a hat? Are they truly gifted with natural talent, as many suggest?
You see, this news, you're dazzled by your talent.
Do they possess a creative streak of genius that is unknown to most men? Or unknown to most men, are they in fact possessed? Is it possible that these actors and actresses are possessed by demonic spirits who have a specific agenda to fulfill? Oscar award-winning actor Denzel Washington told 60 Minutes exactly how he brings forth his best performances.
Basically what I did was got on my knees and sort of communicated with the spirits. And when I came out, I was in charge.
Powerful scene.
Powerful scene. I couldn't have acted that. I couldn't have written that down and made a decision to play that.
What do you smoke that?
No, you are.
Hello, I am.
May Jesus pray.
The one woman entertainment empire known as Oprah has strong affiliations with the demonic realm. The most familiar face on television says,
"You cannot only use your body and physical self. This is how I see acting. I ask my body to be the carrier of the spirits of those who have come before me in a way that is most meaningful to the character. Just become the vehicle for that character."
Calling out for these entities to take her over so that she may become a sparkling puppet, Oprah admits of her work before the camera.
I tried to empty myself and let the spirit inhabit me.
With her global influence, her shows have become a smorgasbord for the New Age agenda.
A lot of actors who don't mention their names, of course, are very much into this. But you only do if you allow them to open yourself up to the possibility.
So if we have people like Denzel Washington, and you know, it's really hard to attack somebody's character because I don't know Denzel Washington. I've never met him. All I can go off of something that he says. And if he says he gets down on his hands and knees when he's asked, "How did you give this type of performance? I prayed to the spirits of the dead, and when they came inside of me, I was in charge." What do we know about the state of the dead? You're not exactly praying to the spirits of, and that movie that they were talking about was Glory. So here, what are some of these actors and actresses into? What kinds of things have they involved themselves into to try to propel their career? Aleister Crowley, known as one of the most evil men in the 20th century. This man was so evil, there's a documentary that was made on him from the BBC that they didn't come across from any sort of religious perspective, and they themselves were like, "Look, this person was seriously the most evil man in a whole century. He was so into demonic practices, so into occultic writings, he basically said that he was Satan's handwrite man." If you get to the bottom of a lot of the writers from Hollywood, a lot of the musicians, you will start to see Aleister Crowley's name pop up all over the place. The Beatles, all these different people got their influences from him. Anton LaVey, the guy who started the Church of Satan, started the Church of Satan off of his writings. So this guy is hugely involved in the occult world. He wrote a book called Magic in Theory and Practice, where he outlined three of the main ways that you could become possessed by a demonic spirit. And here's what he says. There are three main methods of invoking any deity. The third method is the dramatic, perhaps the most attractive at all. Certainly it is to the artist's temperament, for it appeals to his imagination through his aesthetic sense. So he's saying that a great way to become possessed is to possess the character while you're acting. And I took 6 years of acting classes. I was trained how to empty myself and to take on this character and to live and breathe and sleep and basically become that person. So you're inviting that person's life inside of you to do the acting. So I agree with what he is saying here. Socrates says, in like manner, the muse is, of course, the spirit that inspires acting, inspires men herself, because they are inspired and possessed. They are simply inspired to utter that which the muse impels them. For not by art or by knowledge do you say what you say, but by possession. What he is saying has a lot of truth to it. Think about it. Remember the story that Christ told. When the demon was cast out of the man, and the demon came back, and he found the man's life all in order, and his house completely cleaned up and in order. And all of a sudden, he noticed there was nobody home. What did the demon do? He went out and he got seven more unclean spirits and brought them back, and the man was worse off than when he started. So, going on what this is saying, is it possible to be possessed by the Spirit of God? And if you're not possessed by the Spirit of God, is it possible to be able to have a different spirit possess you? Because you see, with the man that had seven unclean spirits that came into his house, do you think they knocked on his door and said, "Excuse me, sir, can I come in?" No. So it's very possible that if you are not on God's side, you can be used as on the devil's side. So let's go through a little bit of movie history here. Rudolph Valentino, how many people know who this guy is? He was huge in his day, in the 1920s. This guy was the Brad Pitt of his day. He was so worshipped by so many people, that's going to be really hard to see. But all of his movies were about passion and love and this and that. That he was so hugely worshipped. Wherever he went, there were such huge crowds that would follow him around. They had to have police completely blockade the streets as he would walk by. And it was said that when he would smoke his cigarettes and throw them down on the ground, girls would dogpile it and try to grab it and take it home and have a little shrine. This guy was hugely worshipped. Now, where he got his inspiration for his movies was from his wife, Natasha. Natasha was in charge of actually writing a lot of the movie scripts that he would act in. So here's what Natasha says. Every night, Valentino's wife, Natasha, would hold a seance calling forth from the spirit world in her creative undertaking. Then with pencil and paper in hand, she would go into a trance and start writing. After her outpourings were typed up, they were brought to the set the next day and given to the director. And these are the stories that were being made. So if you watched a Valentino movie, this is known as automated writing in the occult world. Those are the stories, or those are the ways that the directors would get a lot of this content. And you see, at this time that Valentino was popular, America was founded on deep, deep religious moral values. Very, very deep religious moral values. And you see, the thing that the devil has, which he's coming to a very close end, he can outlive any of us. So if he wants to work through the human race, he's got time to go through a couple different generations. We're getting to that point that he maybe, hopefully, doesn't have another generation that he can get to. But I want to start to show you how Satan has been working at this for 100 years. When his movies came out, because America was stemmed in deep religious moral values, sex outside of a marriage was start to being looked at as popular, trendy, and it was being redefined in American society. And then all of a sudden, Mae West hits the scene. Now, Mae West is known as one of the single women that affected the way that men viewed women and women viewed men in a marriage relationship. Okay? Here's a little clip which she had to contribute to the scene.
1930s, motion pictures were one of the mainstays of the Great Depression, and attendance to movie theaters skyrocketed. Movie star Mae West was also known as the Queen of Sex and the Statue of Libido. Her work helped to topple the biblical sexual boundaries that were deeply embedded in people of the early 20th century.
She can have a romance with somebody outside of the law.
I don't know how many that might.
It was pretty
raw. I don't know how many that might.
It's pretty raunchy for that era.
Well, I'm good, I'm very good. But when I'm bad, I'm
bad. No star had greater impact in the long run than Mae West. Mae West was a one-woman sexual revolution.
So Mae West was starting to unlock some of these biblical values that were instilled into the American society. Here's where Mae West got a lot of her ideas for her scripts. When she was upset no one had been able to come up with a script idea, she would walk about her room saying, "Forces, forces, come to me and help me write a script." She would then begin to hear voices and images as the plot was revealed to her, and Mae would summon stenographers to work with her around the clock, and she would lie in bed in a trance-like state, dictating as the spirits entered. So once again, here's another person that was highly involved in spirit worship, and then all of a sudden, now you can start to see it in her work. And it doesn't take a far stretch to understand. Mae West, I'm no angel. The sensational Mae West. I mean, these are huge, huge things to state at this time in America's history. And then Marilyn Monroe hits the scene. Once again, starting to unlock farther and farther these moral values in our society. And here's what she has to contribute.
7 Year Itch blew the lid off 1950s conservatism. It shocked audiences with its irreverent look at marital infidelity.
I mean, it wouldn't be lying on the floor and it wouldn't be white so much pot and drinking shampoo. It's what, man?
It showcased Marilyn Monroe in her most sexually suggestive role to date.
Let me just open 79. I'll go into the kitchen and get dressed.
The kitchen?
Yes, when it's hot like this, you know what I do? I keep my eggs in the ice box.
She was the sexual icon of her particular time and became, I think, the sex star of the century.
She could make you do anything in the world from that big screen.
Why has Marilyn Monroe got that many other women have and could run out the show?
Well,
that's pretty well done,
Nancy.
I
have a message from your wife.
You can see those early signs of changing values.
I'd like to stay here with you tonight. I'd like to sleep here.
Monroe attributed her ability to affect the public to other entities that would inhabit her and take her over. She was known for entering into deep trances before each scene. One of Monroe's close personal psychics recalled how she would draw attention from the spirit world, asking for their guidance.
When she saw a camera, any camera, she lit up and was totally different. The moment the shot was over, she fell back into her not very interesting position. And I don't know how to explain that.
Well, if she was involved in summoning spirits to come in to her while she was acting, and here even people that were around her said, man, I don't even understand how she would just be so lively when you throw a camera on her and then she just wasn't the same when you weren't. Here's what Marilyn Monroe is quoted saying, Jacqueline Hyde, more than two, I'm so many people, they shock me sometimes. I wish it was just me. She lived a very tortured life. And in fact, if you read into how her life ended, she was absolutely just a mess for what she had done and taken apart these moral values, just like filthy Mr. Hugh Hefner himself. Amazing that he says that, you know, something about values. But here we You start to look at some of these movies that Marilyn Monroe is involved in, and once again, it doesn't take a far stretch to understand where's this inspiration coming from. A wicked sensation of the lonely girl in room 809, Don't Bother to Knock. Marilyn Monroe, then Let's Make Love, the new doctrine of Marilyn Monroe. And today, we are so bombarded with sexual content in movies that we don't even bat an eye. We call it original sin, lead us into temptation, sex drive. It says he's leaving virgin territory. Zach and Miri make a porno. I mean, of course, they're making a comedy about it. But it just doesn't register where we've gotten today. Why? Why are they so attacking our sexuality? Why is sexuality such a prominent thing that Hollywood has long been using against us? There was a movie called American Pie when I was in high school. This will date me right here. Long time ago. It was all about teenage sex. And this movie was horrible. I mean, the content of the movie was nothing about just get rid of it, throw it away. I want to show you a clip of a news company that went around and asked some of these kids that saw this movie, what did you think about it? What was your favorite part?
History that Hollywood peddles adult material to children. And now let's see how the spoon-fed material has affected them.
You've heard one insider describe how a Hollywood machine marketed his R-rated movie to an audience too young to go see it.
What movie did you see?
American Pie. I saw American Pie.
American Pie 2.
American Pie.
American Pie.
I'm 15.
14.
15.
13.
12. 12.
13.
Who wants me to touch? Amber.
Oh, shit!
I love lesbians.
It's like Play-Doh. Put a piece of Play-Doh on the table and it picks up everything. Kids are Play-Doh. They don't even know what they picked up.
They don't even know what they've picked up. At age 12 years old, do you think any of those kids have any idea what sex and the reason and the biblical boundaries that God gave us this wonderful, beautiful thing to us has anything to do with your life? Coming from this, I guarantee you, these poor kids have no idea that these people are targeting these things. American Pie was not made for somebody that's 30, 35, 40, involved in wanting to get into a marriage. There's a lot of young people out there. There's a lot of parents I see out here. Are you guys talking about sex? Are you talking about the biblical boundaries of sex? Because why is Hollywood attacking our sex? You see, God gave us this thing called a relationship because it is a model after his own relationship between God, God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit, a little family. And he gave us a family. And the way that we interact with our family is a way that we can understand the love of God. The devil has long been wanting to undermine and under attack that and break the family unit apart, because if he can twist up your sexuality, good chances are he can twist up your spirituality. So you can start to see, if you aren't talking to your kids about sex, or some of you young married couples out there that have young children, they're going to get it from their friends, from all over the place. So start giving them the reasons that God gave it to us. I Love Lucy. What could possibly be wrong with I Love Lucy? I loved Lucy. My brother and I have probably watched every single episode of this. Every single one. I don't think there's one that you could show me that I haven't seen. But here's what I want to show you. The devil is the most subtly created being on the planet. All he has to do is barely twist something. Where did Lucille Ball get the idea to become a TV star? Because at the time that she started I Love Lucy, she was a major film actress. And it was known as career suicide to leave the big screen and go to the little screen and become a little tiny television actress. And it was looked down upon in their eyes. And here's where she got the idea, was from Carol Lombard. It was the spirit of actress Carol Lombard who guided Lucille Ball into taking a chance on television and accepting the offer to star in I Love Lucy. The glamorous comedian who died in an airplane crash in 1942 appeared to Lucy in 1951. What do we know about the state of the dead? Because Lucille Ball accepted the spirit's urging to take a chance, honey, she made television history. Now, thinking back on I Love Lucy, what was the television show really about? What was it about? I hear a couple of them. How many of you heard that? Tell them the truth. Don't you dare, constantly. I Love Lucy was about a manipulative woman who constantly lied to her husband, her friends, her family, everyone around her, all wrapped in laughter. That's what the show was about, was deception, lying, wrapped in laughter. And in fact, today, we're so bombarded with lying, we even make comedies about them and shows about them. Jim Carrey, Liar, Liar. If you really pick this movie apart, all it's doing is saying, look, there is a time that we need to lie. There is just the right circumstance, just the right situation that you need to not tell the full truth, justifying it. You see, what the devil is doing in a lot of the movies today, and a lot of the ones, like, people always come up and say, well, what about the chick flicks? What about this? What about that? Well, what are chick flicks mostly about? Love. But what kind of love? Some sort of, like this scenario, has this ever happened in these chick flicks? There's a girl that's dating this abusive boyfriend, but oh, the man of her dreams walks in the door. What does she do? She leaves the guy in the abusive relationship to go with this guy, and you as a viewer are like, yay, she left, she divorced this guy who was beating her to go with this person. It's usually some sort of twisted thing that's basically saying, look, there is a time and a place that you are able to break the Ten Commandments. And be careful of that, that even under the guise of laughter and these harmless-looking things, sometimes all they're doing is just undermining one of the commandments. The Pink Panther. Peter Sellers here was an out-of-work actor. This guy couldn't get a job for the life of him. If you read his biography, he goes into a little bit about talking about how he started to invoke spirit worship into his life and his career started to take off.
Peter was absolutely brilliant on first take. Peter Sellers was a struggling actor whose career was on the rocks until he embraced demonic power. After selling his soul, he became the highest paid actor in Hollywood.
The second take was even better,
with three new Pink Panther adventures, all of which attained colossal box office success. Sellers, the has-been, was once again one of the world's highest paid performers.
And isn't that it?
So here's what Peter Sellers says about acting. It's rather like being a medium and laying yourself wide open and saying, I want the character to inhabit my body. I want a spirit to take charge of me so that I can produce what I hope to produce. Robin Williams was once asked by Us Weekly, how is it that you are so funny and such a brilliant actor? And here's what he answered. Yeah, literally, it's like possession. All of a sudden, you're in. You get this energy, and it just starts going. But there is also that thing. It is possession. In the olden days, you would have been burned for it. But there is something empowering about it. I mean, it is a place where you are totally. It is a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, where you really can become this other force. Keanu Reeves, director Taylor Hackford from Devil's Advocate, says this about Keanu. Keanu is a very complex guy with lots of demons in him. And I was trying to tap into him and utilize that. And of course, the Devil's Advocate is all about playing the devil's advocate, what it is. Leo is like a medium. He opens up his body and his mind to receive messages coming from another person's life, says director Anisco Holland from Totally Clips. A totally different director says with Leo, you might see 30 people come out of him in a day. Here's what Johnny Depp tells Us Magazine. I know I have demons. I'm 30 different people sometimes. And think about some of the roles that this guy plays. I've barely even looked at some of the trailers of some of the new movies that are coming out, and I am just like, whoa, these guys are just playing such dark characters. In the Los Angeles Times, Sal Morgan says this about Heath. Heath's creepy performance seems to have summoned up demons no one could have imagined accessible to him. A totally worldly newspaper is saying, wow, this guy's performance was demonic. I mean, that's amazing to me.
And also, I love the script. I love the whole idea of selling yourself to the devil. It's very intriguing to me.
You gotta wonder what the words that are coming out of these people's mouths. I mean, do you think that they're going to get to the end of their life and be like, oh, sorry, God, I was just playing, you know, selling my soul to the devil? I mean, everybody knows there's this war between God and Satan, but some of these people just have even a hard time believing that it's real. There was a writer of a comic book series. He actually came up with a bunch of different comic books named Alan Moore. He came out with this movie called The Watchmen, okay? He also did V for Vendetta. He wrote a Superman. He did From Hell, which was a Johnny Depp movie. He did a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen with Sean Connery. This guy is so open about his demonic possession that he has totally said, my career took off when I started invoking spirits into my writing. So the movies and things that you actually are seeing are movies that he has fully admitted that he has written under possession. So here's a little clip from him. He actually worships a little god called Glycon. It's a snake with a little lion head on it. And listen to what he says about the Christians.
Alan Moore is a writer and magician from Northampton. He's a stranger to hairdressers and worships his very own God in his very own way, blurring the lines between religious belief, magic, and the power of the great imagination. Alan's familiar on his journey of faith and worship is an ancient Roman blood puppet snake called Glycon.
How did you first go about worshipping Glycon? What form does the worship take?
Well, it's irresistible. He's certainly the coolest, most rock and roll looking God that I've ever seen. I'm not just having it for the first time.
What's it for you, that following Glycon?
I believe that every single individual human being should probably make their own peace with the universe. I mean, we're all of us different emotionally, we're all different physically, intellectually. It would be really odd if we were all the same spiritually. So, I mean, that's why I have a problem with religion per se, because religion, the very word, it comes from the same root word as ligature and ligament, and it means to be bound together in one belief, which I find a bit creepy and a bit unnatural.
You can't have that conversation with Christian fundamentalists.
I mean, religious fundamentalism, I mean, it's kind of a misnomer, because if you actually look back at the foundations of Christianity, you find that the thinking is a lot more flexible.
Yeah.
The kind of what we call fundamentalism these days is basically entirely based upon 1930s tent show revivalism.
Right.
It goes back no further than about 80 years. And yet, it's a very fraught and dangerous mindset. Because, I mean, as far as I understand it, at the moment, there are genuine worries that, certainly in America, that this could actually negate science.
Yeah.
That it's going to drag us back into the new dark ages.
So here, this is why it's very important to know who's writing, who's making these movies, what are their belief systems. Because as you're going to the movie theaters and you are sitting there in a dark room staring at a blinking light at 24 frames per second, your brain is thinking on the right side of your brain, opening yourself up to the optimum amount of suggestibility that you could possibly be at, i.e. a state of hypnosis, and you're sitting there soaking in these guys' thoughts. And if you pick apart some of their movies, V for Vendetta, huge Gnostic upside down thinking, all these movies are glorifications of the Luciferian character and demonizing the God character. And he's very, very open about saying, look, at Christianity is a dangerous mindset. It might bring us into the dark ages. Here's what he says about when he started to involve himself into spirit worship. I decided I was going to become a magician, and all of a sudden a lightning bolt hit and it all got a bit strange. For months after that, I was looking back probably in some sort of borderline schizophrenic state. I found myself seemingly in conversation with an entity, its presence that surrounded my head and speaking lucidly to me. I was very spaced out, God-struck. You babble for a while like an idiot. I must have been unbearable for 2 or 3 months. I've integrated that into the rest of my life. He's a huge Aleister Crowley follower. He's very open about it. And these are the types of philosophies that he's incorporated into his movies. Anton LaVey, the guy who started the Church of Satan, based off of Aleister Crowley's writing, says this about the television. The television is the mainstream, a major mainstream infiltration for the new satanic religion. The TV set or satanic family altar, which is ironic that he calls it this, has grown more elaborate since the early 1950s. From the tiny fuzzy screens to huge entertainment centers covering entire walls and several TV monitors. What started as an innocent respite from everyday life has now become in itself a replacement for real life for millions, a major religion of the masses. And how many times, this is coming from the dark side, this isn't even from the Christian perspective. He's saying that, look, this is a major religion of the masses. Have we let this become a major religion of our masses in our churches? What have we all been trained to do? When I was in college, I could not wait till the sun went down on Sabbath. Brandon and I would go to the movie theater and we'd bounce from movie to movie to movie and watch them till 2 o'clock in the morning. I just couldn't get enough of this kind of stuff. And of course, it was replacing real life for me. These are the types of content that are coming out. And how many times have you seen these movies and these things and you just kind of get up and try to take the good from the bad? In fact, we rarely sit down and really contemplate the words that were said in a movie when you leave. Yeah, you talk about maybe this scene or that scene, but these things are able to be just implanted into the back of our minds. And just like the advertising industry, through repetition, they are able to start to change your views of God and start to change who is it that we are truly worshiping. The more that we focus on these characters and the more that we focus on these actors, we start to take on the characteristics of them. And if they're involving themselves in spirit worship, what kinds of characteristics are we actually really starting to take on? Let me tell you, the reason that I started this whole thing out with the story of the Garden of Eden, the children coming out of Egypt, is because go home and read that story. The account of the Israelites in Egypt, like we are in Egypt now, we are standing on the edge of the promised land, just like the Israelites were standing on the edge of the promised land when Balaam was asked to come and curse them. And just like the Midianite kings and the kings of the world sent their people into Israel's camp just to get them to witness how they worshiped, We are also having things sent into our homes via the television, which 99% of people all have. And if we're sitting there witnessing how the world is having their worship ceremonies, we will fall into an apostatic state just like the Israelites did. Many of us will lose our way and lose our focus. And I'm speaking of this from firsthand experience. I lost my way because of this. And God is such a merciful and gracious God. He can turn around anybody's life. Do not stop praying for people. Each of us have a family member or someone that we know that is not in a relationship with God. Maybe has the outward appearance of professing Christianity. But let me tell you, through the prayers of my friends, through Brandon, through my grandma, through prayers of my family, God sent us people that brought us out, and my life has been changed because of it, and I know anyone's life can be changed. And let me tell you, I was so obsessed with this kind of stuff that now I haven't watched a movie in I don't even know how long. I can't watch a movie. I'm like the worst person to watch a movie anyway because I'm like, did you see that? Did you see what was in the background? Did you notice what was in the background of that? The checkered floor and the all that kind of stuff? Did you notice that? There's so many different layers. Just like that thing that Brandon showed you where there's you know, the girl and they're painting her up and stretching her out and doing all those different things. There's so many processes. By the time it gets to you as the viewer, you have no idea what the studio believes, what the person that wrote it believes, anybody, and it's impossible to do that much research on it. So just, I pray, know that this is a major infiltration. And this is a major thing that the devil is using to try to lead us away from God. Let's say a prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you so much for your Sabbath day today that we can come together and worship. Lord, be with each and every person in this room as they go home with this information and they think about it and they think about what it means in their life. And Lord, I just pray that you soften the hearts and open the eyes of everyone here. Lord, give us the eyes for you, for Christ. Let us put on Christ's characteristics and focus on him. And Lord, give each and every person the loving relationship that you want to have with them. I love you. Amen.